You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to your favorite day of the week. I am your host, Adam Mattes. I am not joined by Anthony Irwin. I made a great trade this week in the offseason and upgraded. I have Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic. Sam, how are you doing?
Adam, I'm doing great. I feel like Anthony might take offense to that, so I'm just filling in here, but thank you for having me.
I only say things I know he would say about me, so it's perfectly fine. Today's show, we have a lot of good stuff to talk about. In segment one, we want to look at today's marquee games. There were some interesting outcomes and some exciting ones, some exciting highlights. In segment two, we're going to look at some of the surprise teams in both conferences and see if they are for real or if they are in line for a regression. And we'll wrap things up in segment three, kind of doing the opposite, looking at teams that have struggled out of the gate but maybe are starting to get some momentum, and we'll see what it takes for them to climb back in. But we're going to start. The Rockets defeated the Los Angeles Lakers tonight 126-111 behind James Harden's 50-point triple-double, the fourth 50-point triple-double of his career, which is now the most in NBA history. Russell Westbrook has three. Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor each have two. What did you think? Did you get a chance to catch this game or catch some of the highlights of it? And what did you make of this one?
No, I watched a lot of it. Full disclosure, the first half was watched from the comfort of my home with full focus. Second half, this is the juggling of fatherhood. I was at the seventh grade play at a middle school. I was the dad in the back with the iPhone and the AirPods, you know, watching the second half and multi, you know, tasking a little bit. But my bottom line would be, I mean, Houston at home doing what they did for so much of last season, which is when the game is tight, you know, when it looks like it might go one way or the other, you know, James took over and they did what they, you know, haven't been able to do a lot of the year. The Lakers, honestly, I think still look good, but they struggle from the line a ton of the night. And I know after the fact, my colleague Bill Oram, who covers the Lakers for The Athletic, was tweeting about how there's frustration on the Lakers side because you know, while their defense has been a whole lot better recently, they're fouling way too much. And I think that kind of that came back to bite them tonight. But amazing game for James. I mean, for me, Adam, the thing that struck me was that I had written this morning or kind of published this morning a column on LeBron and how I think he's got the early edge on the MVP race. And I almost I'm not even kidding you. I almost forgot to mention James because the Rockets have been so bad. I had one throwaway line where I said, you know, reigning MVP James Harden, you know, has been producing it at his typical high level, but the Rockets are a mess. And that has been the case, but I think that win over the Lakers is a very good sign.
Yeah, I think he read your piece and then he came out knowing you would be on this show talking about the game.
You're kidding, but I would not put it past Daryl Morey to text it to James.
That'd be
and
great.
Say, you know, and make him log on to The Athletic, of course. I'm sure he's a, you know, behind the paywall with us. But yeah, I mean, it's James was just amazing.
Yeah, he was. And you know what's interesting? According to your colleague, Kelly Eco at The Athletic, James Harden called for an extended two-hour practice earlier this week, which is, I think, very rare anyway in the NBA, but I think even probably more rare for a team like Houston and for a player like James Harden. But, you know, this is the point in the season where teams have to pivot, especially the ones that are struggling. And we all know that Houston is good. They're talented. But maybe this was sort of the breaking point for them to sort of get back in the groove. What do you think of what you've seen out of them now over this week? And do you think that they're poised to make a run?
I'm not ready to say they're there. I mean, you're still talking about, as I cheat and try to look at their schedule. I mean, they dropped a few games before winning these last two, and the defense continues to be a problem. And, you know, and we all know the subplot here. We know the role players that they lost and the fact that their identity changed. We know the scrutiny that is with good reason been placed upon, you know, the way they defend and the fact that last year their greatest defensive strength being the, you know, 1-5 switching, yeah, had become their greatest weakness. And they an inability, I mean, it depends on what side of the fence of the debate you're on, but it's either an inability to adjust to the roster changes that happened, you know, or simply, you know, you look at the front office and say they dropped the ball and they didn't stay within the system and the winning formula that they had created. But however you want to kind of splice it out, you know, I think they still have issues, but this is a team that has two MVP caliber players in James, right, and Chris. And even, you know, even Chris with the years and the miles that he has, you know, he's still on that short list of talents in this league. So, you know, you had to think at some point they were going to start chalking up these W's.
Let's bounce around the league. There was another big game, I thought, tonight. The Spurs handed the Clippers their biggest loss of the season, 125-87. LaMarcus Aldridge led the way with 27 points on 12 of 14 shooting. The Spurs have now won four straight, all of those at home. They've got two more games at home against Chicago and Philadelphia before they go back out on the road. We're used to the Spurs going on that rodeo road trip and going on a run and kind of finishing the season strong. This is a six-game homestand for them, and it seems like they're starting to get their mojo back. What are you seeing out of them?
No, they look better. I mean, they've been wildly inconsistent because, you know, early on, we were buying what they were selling. DeMar was channeling, you know, his LeBron playmaking type, you know, game that we had not seen in Toronto.
Sure.
And we saw kind of the way that he was trying to fit into Pop's system. And it was, you know, rave reviews. And then they went on that slide and they were terrible. And they had some of the worst losses in franchise history, all within the scope of a week. You know, and LaMarcus Aldridge looked like Father Time had just kind of punched him in the face really quickly. And, you know, now it's going the other way. I know, you know, in that Clippers game, Aldridge had a big night. And on the flip side, the Clippers are interesting. I think right now, I was down in L.A. this week. You obviously had the Kawhi Leonard subplot. They lose Lou Williams, you know, who's always just giving them major buckets all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, and they're sliding a little bit. And so, you know, the table's getting turned where now the Spurs are handing out these blowout wins. Not necessarily something I saw coming. I mean, that win over Utah. I mean, the Phoenix win is it is what it is. The Suns are struggling. But, you know, Utah win, you know, beating the Lakers at home like they did. You know, it's a nice little stretch for San Antonio.
I feel like sometimes that's what teams need, though. Good wins, bad wins, whatever. Just if you could string together a couple of them and get comfortable, just the rhythm 100%. Of the season. And
yeah.
I know Denver went through a tough patch a couple weeks back, and it was a patch where they were on the road playing basically every other day for 3 weeks in a row. And it's just one of those things. I think sometimes it's no mystery how teams succeed and fail in the NBA. Some of these things have a lot to do with it. Let's wrap up this first segment, though. You talked about the Clippers. They've lost four of five, and their next nine games all come against teams above 500, eight of those in the Western Conference. I mean, so this is going to be a theme of this episode, by the way. The NBA is just so good right now. Everybody's schedule I look at and I go, oh, man, that's a tough stretch coming up. But the Clippers, I think, especially is tough with those nine games just coming against playoff caliber teams. Do you see them kind of falling back? I think they're the surprise team for a lot of people. Do you think there's a little fool's gold there?
Well, remind me on the Lou Williams front, what kind of timeline are we looking at?
You know, I actually,
let me go to the good old, Google intro web here. Yes. I mean, bottom line,
two more weeks,
2 weeks. I mean, that's a tough blow. Oof. I mean, he carries them offensively. You know, Gallinari's been really good, and you know, and that's been a major bonus. Tobias Harris obviously doing really good things. You know, they are taking a backslide, and the parity that you're mentioning, Adam, blows me away. And yes, like the Clippers have been a shockingly surprising team, except that they're also like one of four or five teams that have shocked us. You know, yeah. If you look at like even the idea to your comment on the Spurs and how basically any win is a good win, right?
Yeah.
Like I couldn't agree more, because when you're looking at the West, you know, you're talking about from 15 to Denver at the number one spot, a 5.5 game gap.
Yeah.
5.5 games between 15 teams is absurd. And so the Clippers are going to be in these dogfights, you know, for the next couple of weeks, like you said, with that tough schedule. I'd be shocked if they completely fell off the cliff. I mean, Doc has been doing a nice job with this kind of like ragtag, you know, just, you know, they've got this identity with the Clippers where they, in the contrast to the Lakers, they have a blacktop versus big top mentality. That's what they're selling. They're trying to get free agents to buy into the idea that we are the no drama, basketball first, no soap operas, none of the nonsense that you get in Lakerland or anywhere else, you know, like you see around the NBA all the time. They're trying to hoop. And you know, I'd be shocked if they fell off all the way, but certainly a tough stretch.
I'm going to sell the Clippers, and here's why. I think everything I've read about them, there's been some great pieces that have come out about them this week, really over the last 2 weeks. So much joy, playing with no expectations, and just sort of that fun, scrappy underdog group, and that's sort of been their MO. The NBA schedule tests every team, and I just don't think you can play that way for 82 games. And we talked about losing Lou Williams and how crucial that's been. There's just going to be a stretch, and maybe they're in it right now, that can break teams. And I just think they're a team that you take a little hit here or there, and all of a sudden the entire mojo's out of whack. Because I don't know that they can win on talent every single night. So they're a team as tough as the West is. I think this next 9 games probably separates them and drops them into that third tier out West, third or fourth tier, where they're right on the bubble for the playoffs. So I'm selling them. But
is fair to piggyback on that real quick, you know, and why I think the next couple of weeks are going to be so fascinating across the board in the West is because the settling you're talking about, like you said at the top here, it normally has happened by this point, right? Like another team that comes to mind, you know, the Kings are still sitting there. They're 15-12. You know, they're 3 games back in the top spot. And I'd be tempted like you to sell on them and say in the next few weeks that'll probably come back down to earth. But, you know, what is it here? I got 6 out of the 7 teams that are out of playoff position right now were in the playoffs last year, which is I can't ever remember seeing something like that.
Me neither. It's crazy. All right, let's take a quick break. I want to pull on that thread more because I have an interesting stat to open the next segment. And then we're going to talk about some of the surprise teams that are still up there, including Dallas and including Memphis, Indiana out east. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, we're here on the Friday edition of the Locked On NBA podcast. I'm joined by a senior NBA writer for The Athletic, Sam Amick, and we are talking about right now the loaded Western Conference and some of the surprise teams that are in the top of the standings right now. And here's an interesting one. Last year at this time, on December 13th, 7 of the 8 teams that were in the top 8 in the standings out West finished in the top 8 out West. So basically, by this time, the teams were settled. The two teams that swapped, Denver fell from the 6 seed to the 9 seed. Utah went from the 9 seed. I don't remember. Did they finish in the 6? So those teams, I think, just swapped positions, basically. Right now, you look at it, there's a lot of teams that I think people would be surprised if the standing stayed this way, including Dallas, Sacramento, as you mentioned right before the break. But I want to start with the team I know best that I cover here in Denver, the number one team out in the Western Conference, the Denver Nuggets. They have been great so far this year on both ends of the floor, top 10 in offense and defensive efficiency. But they have now just run into maybe the worst injury luck in the NBA. 3 starters out, Will Barton probably out for a week or two more. Gary Harris probably out for 2 or 3 more weeks. Paul Millsap, who's been their defensive backbone, he is probably out until the end of January or early February. Denver, as good as they've been, these injuries are, just like you talked about with the Clippers, these injuries could really be the thing that changes their entire season.
No, it could, and certainly I'm guilty of, you know how it is when you cover this league for a while, you have folks that you end up, you enjoy seeing them succeed. Mike Malone is a guy that I enjoyed in Sacramento, and it's been fun to see him kind of help that group coalesce and see the front office believe in him and think Tim Conley and that group has done a great job. So there's part of me that I don't normally get attached to certain storylines. Like, I'm bummed out by what's happening in Denver. Yeah. I loved the early surge. I loved, you know, again, everything they had going. I was with the team a little bit in San Diego during training camp and connected with Mike and, you know, and got to see these different, just kind of the chemistry, the personalities. And they had a great thing going, and they still do, but health is health. And, I mean, this is an awful run. And I think the thing you look at now is just, they got to find a way to not let go of the rope, and you're going to take a hit and slide down in those standings. But certainly they got to avoid flirting with that, you know, kind of non-playoff territory disaster that would be such a disappointment. But these are they're the most banged up team in the whole league right now.
I think one of the interesting things, you mentioned Michael Malone, this is the second youngest team in the NBA, and he's been with them basically through every step of this process, from rookies to now this third and fourth year players that make up the core of their team. They've really taken on his identity, I think, in sort of this toughness and resolve. I think he's instilled that in them. That's one of the characteristics you really see. But that's going to really be tested. And Nikola Jokic is such a different guy, different player, different personality and all those things. He is now forced into the forefront, I think, of, okay, your second, third, and fourth player, best players are all out. Can your first best player carry a team to at least a couple surprise wins along the way to hold the door? It's an interesting question I don't know the answer to.
It is, and the obvious follow, I think, is just the fact that the inherent kind of nature of, you know, Nikola's game, it just, it lends me to think that he's probably not going to pull that off. It's just not what we have seen. I mean, he has had plenty of games with monster numbers, but a lot of times it's his ability to lift up those guys around him that are so talented with that, that playmaking ability. And then he'll drop 30 plus on you and do his thing offensively as well. I don't necessarily see him as a, you know, put the whole squad on my back type of guy. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe we'll see. It's going to be tough. You know, they obviously, and I was looking at, has the Nick Young debut happened yet?
he was active and available last game, but he did not get in.
All right. I mean, you know, I think maybe we should go desperation time here. And you know, since Swaggy already came to Denver, can we have like a Nuggets Mellow reunion?
Just you know, keep it. Oh, my. I got to cut you off there, Sam. Cut the mic. Cut the mic. No. Let's go
I mean, it's not to keep slow you down there, Adam, but what is the latest on the Isaiah Thomas front? How close are we getting there?
The team has not provided an update. Adrian Wojnarowski reported a couple weeks back that he expected him in December, but, you know, sort of poking around. I don't know. The Nuggets have been very tight-lipped with injuries and injury updates, but I would kind of be surprised if he was back before the new year. So I think he might be on the horizon as well.
Yeah, I mean, I had heard a little while ago that, I mean, you know, he was kind of tentatively looking around the Christmas you know, spot. So, I mean, that would, if he was healthy at all, that would be a nice injection.
I think if he was close, he'd be back now because of how desperately the team needs him. And that's kind of what I think about. Let's talk about Dallas, though, a team that's actually down to the Suns as we speak. 8-2 over their last 10. They have wins over the Celtics, Rockets, Clippers, and Blazers. Some pretty good wins. They have a 4-game Western road trip coming up. They have home and away against Oklahoma City and New Orleans after that. They have had the fourth easiest schedule so far, but again, that schedule I just quoted is pretty tough coming up. Are they for real, or are they the feel-good team that's had the soft schedule?
You know, I like them. I wonder about Luka and, you know, if he's going to be able to keep it at this level for all 82, or if it's going to be that kind of that phenomenon that you see in baseball where the second time through the rotation teams start to figure him out a little bit. Maybe not. I mean, he looks like he's absolutely the real deal. And it's been one of the most exciting rookie campaigns that we've seen in quite some time. And, you know, and he's been electric. So beyond that, the defensive side has been a nice surprise. You know, they go out and they get the big fella and DJ, you know, despite some of the drama that had been around him early on, the idea that he was stealing rebounds and being selfish and things like that. They got through that. And I mean, I looked here. I mean, they're ninth in the league right now in net rating defensively. Or, I'm sorry, defensive rating. So they've got a good thing going. Rick Carlisle showing yet again, you know, just one of the best coaches we've seen. So I like what they're doing, but they're in that same camp, I think, with Sacramento, with the Clippers, where it feels like kind of a 50-50 proposition of what direction it's going to go.
Were you a Luka guy at the draft?
I was, and I'm in the kind of the I'm in the epicenter of that debate because I'm based in Northern California, south of Sacramento, north of the Bay. And it's like Kings fans, they're still torn because even with all this winning, and honestly, even with Marvin Bagley playing pretty well.
He's good.
Yeah, although it cracks me up because they're, you know, the Kings fans are becoming the experts of, they probably never heard of per 36 until this year. But now the argument is all, if you Bagley next to Doncic per 36, they feel good.
Hey, Kings fans, Nuggets fans, know what you're talking about. Jokic, the same, he was playing like 12 minutes. You're like, hey, per 36, he's Wilt Chamberlain. So.
Right, exactly. But I mean, it's, you know, they're still taking, you know, taking shots for not picking up Luka. The only saving grace from the Kings front, I think, is that everything I've heard, they were fairly unified in the decision not to take him. And that's from Vlade Divac to Brandon Williams, you know, their assistant GM, and Ken Cannella, their other assistant GM. So, you know, they feel good about Bagley. But, you know, when you see Luka going viral every couple nights with some of these just ridiculous shots he's hitting and things he does, you know, I'm sure there have been nights when they wondered what he might look like in a Kings jersey.
Memphis Grizzlies, kind of a classic grit and grind Grizzlies team, 26th in offense, 4th in defense, which makes them about league average in net rating. Just real quickly on them, what do you think of their odds to sort of hold that final spot or hold a spot out west?
At this point, I'm buying them as a playoff team. Again, guys who I've enjoyed. So Mike Conley is classy as they come. I watched an interview today that I hopefully properly attributing. I think it was Action Sports Network talking to Mike, and he was talking about that elusive All-Star berth. And I found myself kind of shrugging, going, ah, man, like it's just that's where I just don't see it, even though he's having another really good year. And that's kind of the, you know, that's unfortunately been his legacy, All-Star caliber player who can't get in the All-Star game.
Right.
But Mike has been really good. Mark, I think what I found most interesting is that I asked somebody with the Grizzlies not too long ago about JV Bickerstaff and the job he's done. And they brought up Marc Gasol and the fact that he helped re-energize Mark. They also kind of made a smart-ass joke about how, you know, not being David Fizdale gets you a long ways with Marc Gasol. Like it just kind of that was so toxic between the two of them before. You know, they've also changed the way they use Mark a little bit, and they got a good thing going. I do, you know, we were sleeping on the fact that if healthy, and that's a major qualifier with, you know, these Grizzlies stars, that if healthy, history tells us that Mike Conley and Marc Gasol get the Grizzlies to the playoffs. That's what they
do. Right. See, I'm selling them for the same reason as the Clippers is I don't know that they're a great team. I think they have two great players, and teams like that, I think, are just more susceptible to something bad happening or foul trouble on any given night. And so I like them. There's so many teams out West that I like that I'm selling. But let's wrap this up with Indiana. I want to go out east and talk about some of these Eastern Conference teams. This is the one I picked. They've won five straight. They have the sixth best net rating. They do not play. This is a crazy stat. They do not play another Western Conference opponent until January 15th. So they have almost an entire month of Eastern Conference in their schedule coming up. What do you make of them? They've been very impressive so far this year, but in that perfect spot for a team of their caliber where they're flying under the radar.
No, I like them a lot. And I mean, to do what they did and kind of stay afloat with Oladipo on the, you know, on the shelf was impressive. Nate McMillan is one of these guys that he's just so understated that I feel like, you know, you barely even know he's there, and he's been putting together just in terms of longevity and, you know, pretty decent level of success. It's a pretty nice career. And I like what they have been doing. You know, Bogdanovich is playing really well when Oladipo is out, and they've got a good thing going. I mean, if you take a quick step back and hit the rewind button and remember where they were not that long ago when Paul George, you know, was walking into ownership's office with Aaron Mintz, his agent, and saying, "Here I come, Lakerland, and get me out of here." It's one of the best pivots that we've seen from, you know, a team that was put into a tough position. And I love the fact that actually, you know, that market, just because it is kind of, it's such a hoops passionate part of the country, find myself just being happy that those basketball fans are getting something to root for.
Doesn't that Paul George saga feel like it was four or five years ago? I mean, it feels like several eras ago. It was a year ago.
Yeah. And no, that's insane. I mean, it does feel like it was a while ago. It's now becoming like historical context for other stuff. Like, I'm going to probably touch on the Clippers situation here in the next couple of days with something I write. And and it's like the Toronto trade for Kawhi Leonard is directly analogous to what Oklahoma City did with Paul George.
Right.
You know, and the the Raptors approach and what they're trying to accomplish right now is the same exact thing that the Thunder did. But yes, I mean, the whole Pacers backstory, you know, and that awkward in between when everybody knew Paul didn't want to be there, but he did have a connection with those fans and affinity for those fans, and he was trying to like let them down as softly as possible. And it does. I mean, it feels like it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to finish out your Friday edition with some teams that have underperformed this year and see if they are cooked or if they have a run in them. We'll be right back. All right, I'm here with Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic, and we're going to take a look here to close out your Friday. We're going to look at some teams that have struggled so far. I want to start out east with a team that I actually think is either cooked or I don't know what the point is if they're not. The Washington Wizards, they are only a game and a half back. The east at the bottom is just so different than the west at the bottom. They're terrible. They've been terrible. They're on a three-game losing streak, including a very ugly loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers. But they're only a game and a half back of the eight seed. What do you make of them, and where do they go from here?
Yeah, I mean, they'll have these glimmers of hope, but you feel like not to be too overly dramatic, but I feel like we already know that the core is rotten.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's the hardest part to get past. You know, for one, you talk about like the Paul George story feeling like a while ago. The John Wall and Bradley Beal having friction story seems like that's been around forever.
Yes.
And then it got even worse this year, obviously, with, you know, some of the stuff that came out. Austin Rivers, I think personality wise has not helped. The Dwight situation has not helped. Things like that. And I know, you know, Bradley came out real strong against the kind of fringe reports that he wanted out. I mean, listen, there's always that gray area where it's like, sure, you didn't walk into the front office and say, get me out now. But I mean, I think it's widely understood that there's a level of discontent there that is not the healthiest type of thing. So it leaves the organization in a pretty strapped position, because you're talking about some massive contracts. You know, Brad's the far and away the most attractive guy trade-wise, but the Wizards would want just a boatload, you know, if they were going to give him up. You got the Otto Porter stuff where, you know, a lot of teams are monitoring his situation. So I don't see this iteration, you know, having some sort of miraculous kind of epiphany that they love each other and get their stuff together, but they're going to win games on talent alone every once in a while.
I always refer to them, there's continuity and then there's growing stale. And there's like a thin line, I think, between like peak continuity and you know, just being together too long. They're so far past that line that they're sort of the opposite of the Clippers, winning with joy. They're losing with sadness and frustration, I think.
It sounds like the worst motto for a marketing billboard ever.
There you go.
Losing with sadness.
I'm going to pitch it to him. The Minnesota Timberwolves, 13-15. They're 14. They're second to worst in the Western Conference, but they're just 2.5 games back of the 8 seeds because every team is right there together. They have been a top 10 offense and top 10 defense since the Jimmy Butler trade. I think that's sort of flown under the radar a bit, but they're also only 9-6 in that stretch. They've beaten some of the teams you'd expect them to and lost to the ones they have. And I think over the stretch, do you think they are a team that is too far back? And there's just too many teams ahead of them. Or do you think that they could sort of get on a roll?
I'm not sure. I mean, I didn't know what, listen, when they first come out of the post Jimmy Butler gates, you know, with a better defense without Jimmy Butler than they had with him, that made no sense to me. Yeah. You know, I thought that was puzzling. And then you kind of attributed to the Karl Anthony Towns, you know, kind of being free component and thing, you know, just the spirit of the team. I don't know what to make at this point. You know, they've lost 4 out of 6. That Sacramento loss, I know you're on the road, but that's probably the worst one that they've had in a little while, because you can't crack on them for losing to the Warriors, can't really crack on them for losing to the Blazers. But, you know, they're just a team that, even though we are already almost at the halfway point because of that trade, it's almost like, you know, they had no training camp with this new group, with these new roles, and just kind of the tweaking of their system on both ends of the floor. You know, maybe that's going to lead to some growing pains and inconsistent play. I think they have stuff to be excited about. The guy who probably shouldn't be excited is Tom Thibodeau. I really do still think he's got a, like that, you know, that early stretch where they were winning at a 70% clip. If he does that, you know, I think he's going to be fine this summer when it comes to his job. But if they teeter at the end and end up missing the playoffs, then I think certainly it could lead to, you know, Tom losing that job.
So many coaches' jobs hang in the balance over one game, basically going one way or the other. New Orleans is a team I'm worried about. 5-8 over their last 13. They have not won back-to-back games in over a month. They have a tough 4-game road trip right on the horizon here. All playoff caliber teams. And it finishes sort of in Los Angeles, which right around Christmas, which I think is interesting, because if you go on a slide leading into Christmas and you're already, you know, in that bottom or second, third to worst in the Western Conference, you know, I think that's some really bad energy to be bringing to the new year. What do you see with them, and how close are they, do you think, to just starting to spiral out?
Yeah, not positive at all. The pressure just kind of continues to slowly build, and more recently, not really slowly at all, because we know the backdrop there. I mean, you know, you talk about Paul George and that thing feeling like a million years ago. It's going to be next summer before you know it, and Anthony Davis is going to be, you know, that much closer to free agency, and Boston and the Lakers are going to be coming at the Pelicans saying, you know, we'll give you this, you know, nice, handsome package for you to go ahead and let AD walk, because if, you know, they've got that Supermax fork in the road this summer. Can they convince Anthony to sign it? if you keep going down this path with the team, you know, given the fact that they were excited about some of the moves in the summer, they thought that it was prudent to part ways with the Marcus Cousins. They thought the Julius Randle pickup, you know, was a really nice one. Early on, Elfrid Payton was playing really well before he got hurt. So they had a lot to be excited about. Things have changed. And the elephant in the room, again, is AD and just the idea that they certainly could lose him.
I think that's probably the story of January, February coming up. If this team just slides a little bit, I mean, New Orleans has to look at it and say, what do we have, both short-term and long-term? And that's when all of the rumors, I think, really start to pick up. Last one here, because it's locked on, we better talk about the Utah Jazz. I don't want to get fired. They are 14, they are 14 and 15. They had a bit of momentum coming into this week, but they just got beat pretty handily by Oklahoma City and San Antonio. And they have a pretty, as every team out West does, there's just no break for them. They have a lot of really, really tough games, most of them at home, but you're still talking about Golden State, Oklahoma City, Philadelphia, and they also play every other night or back to back all the way until January 4th. So they have a tough stretch coming up. What do you see from them?
I mean, there's a lot of layers to it. You know, I think that Donovan's rookie campaign, especially the way that it slowly built. Remember, early on he was so inefficient, and folks were questioning the degree to which he had a green light, and it was a little ugly at times. And then he got it. Really got it going. And then by the end of it, it's like, my God, this guy's a superstar. And he had, you know, 20-point quarters in the postseason, things like that. I think with that came the faulty assumption that, you know, that year two was just going to be, you know, more of the same, if not more. And he's fallen off a little bit. The inconsistency has been there. And I think that's a problem. You know, Ricky Rubio has not been, you know, he's dealt with health stuff as well, but not as consistent as he was last year. You know, I think this is a little more nuanced, but there's certainly some arguments that have been made that with the league's re-emphasis on freedom of movement year, that it really that probably affected Utah's defense more than anybody.
They were the handsiest team in the NBA on defense last year.
100%. You know, and that's just a game changer when you take that weapon away from them. So all of a sudden, I don't know exactly, and I could grab it here real quick, you know, where they're at defensively. I mean, they were the best in the league last year, and right now they are.
I was looking 10th. At it earlier. Okay, a 10th. Okay.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about, I mean, that's their identity. They didn't have a gangbusters offense last year. It was good enough to get the job done, but they dominated with defense. And so, you know, they are not an elite defensive team anymore, and that's a major problem. So, you know, any team that loses any, you know, significant part of its identity for whatever reason, you're going to see struggles.
This isn't the fault of Donovan Mitchell because he's a second-year player, but, you know, I thought even last year he's a tough shot maker. And those guys are great in the fourth quarter, and they're great in the last 5 minutes. But if that's all you have offensively, or if that's your number one option is have this guy take and make tough shots, I don't even know if it's inconsistency. It's the best guys make 30% of their tough, you know, contested jumpers off the dribble. And unfortunately, he's just relied upon to make so many of those. And I don't know if it's going to change. I don't know that they have the offense to be up there. So I do think they have to be a top three or four defense for them to get this thing rolling. And maybe they'll get there. They have the defensive talent, but like you said, they had to adjust.
Well, and from a shooting standpoint, and I think it was Zach Harper who wrote this in a recent Athletic Power Rankings, he was essentially saying that, you know, every three-point shooter on the Jazz was worse this year than they were last year. And Joe Ingles in particular, like if you kind of in a vacuum said, you know, hey, how do you feel about Joe Ingles shooting 38% from three? You kind of shrug and say, that's fine. You know what I mean? But he was 44 last year. He was one of the best in the entire league.
Yeah.
So you add up all these different kind of things that we're putting into the pot, and you start to understand, I think, why they're not the team they were.
Sam, thanks so much for joining. We bounced around a lot of teams. We covered a lot of ground.
You got it, Adam. Thanks for joining me, or having me, joining me, all the same.
Whatever we did.
Appreciate it.
Whatever it was. Yes. To everybody else, I hope you enjoy your weekend. And, of course, the network will be back on Monday with a full week of episodes. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.